everyone. My name is Ken Woods. I'm a conductor and cellist, and as part of Mahler in Manchester, the folks at the Bridgewater Hall thought it would be interesting to do something that you don't do very often, which is get conductors talking to each other. So I'm delighted to be here with John Andrea Nozeda, one of the most exciting conductors in the world these days, to talk about Mahler 1, Mahler 6, Mahler 10, the whole project here. Thank you for making time, Maestro.
Hello.
Have you done Mahler 1 with this orchestra before?
I did something like a year ago, but we didn't play in the Bridgewater, so it was a sort of preparation, warming up for the cycle. But we did some serious work and rehearsal period at that time, and also for this opening of this cycle in Bridgewater Hall in Manchester, we did a serious job, serious amount of rehearsals, so we are ready to perform it.
I'm sure you are. Does it feel different? Are you finding new things as you look at the score this time?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's a signal of a good piece of music. So if every single time you approach it again, one more time, and you find new things, that means the piece is really well written and beautiful. It's a signal of bad music when you don't find anything new when you approach the piece. But with Mahler, you have plenty of occasions to surprise yourself.
Absolutely.
So I found different and very, very specific dynamics, which I already knew, but I tried to take out from the score, and more direction in the first movement, which has more horizontal feeling. So mm-hmm. this kind of lines, very horizontal, and more verticality in the second movement, at the scherzo. Mm-hmm. And this color also of the March Funèbre, the third movement, which is a very strange idea. It's typical of the Sud Tyrol, the north part of Italy, with German-speaking people, even if it's in Italy, mm-hmm. Where the funeral funerals are today really like in the Mahler time. So with the banda, the brass banda mm-hmm. in front, the coffin in between, and the second place and the third place, all the relatives and the friends. So in the third movement reminds me this kind of procession going to the cemetery. So it's very moving symphony, and to go to this finale, which is flamboyant, and where Mahler really becomes himself.
Yes.
So because the first three movements is still is Mahler himself, but is more connected with the late Romanticism. But mm-hmm. with the fourth movement, is really breaking the wall and opening the door of a new world.
I mean, there's nothing like the finale of the symphony before it, I think, where you have really the sense that the piece has ended at this first climax, and then you have to build back up. It fails and collapses.
It is true. It's difficult to build up the performance of the finale because you have the possibility to miss the climax because you have three or four.
Mm-hmm.
If you just emphasize all the three, you just don't get the momentum, the real high point,
mm-hmm.
which comes very close to the end mm-hmm. when the French horn just stands and just plays this chorale, a very joyful chorale. So I think it's a very challenging symphony, but so beautiful, and it's so rewarding to play it.
What was your introduction to the music of Mahler?
Oh, my introduction of the Mahler music has been a latecomer in my life, because the first symphony I heard was the number 4, with a recording I had at home conducted by Maestro Abbado, and I was fascinated but also scared by this world, because it was something connected with the German way of structure of the mm-hmm. music, but also with the elements that disturbed me a bit mm-hmm. because some dissonances, some very deep emotions, very sudden changing of atmosphere, of moods.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when I was a teenager, I was a little bit disturbed by that. But and also when I became a conductor, I started quite late to approach Mahler, because I was scared to conduct. I didn't think to be ready to do that. But at a certain point, one day you have to start, in a way. Bad or good, you have to start.
And
I started with Mahler 5, preparing the orchestra for Maestro Georges Prêtre. I was a young conductor, and I studied, I learned the symphony. Since that moment, I probably became addicted.
A lot of us have gone through that experience of preparing Mahler for a senior conductor. What did you learn from that experience?
Oh, of course, I learned the way to narrate the story, the plot. Of course, I don't have anything in mind, no pictures, no. But the music tells a story. You have to be able to be a narrator with the sensibility to find the coup de théâtre. You know, like when you tell a story, a fairy tale to the children, you have to keep their attention alive. Mm. So you have sometimes to make longer the silence, just to make them to expect something new. Sometimes you have to shout, and they will just be shocked by your scream. And you have to put very mysterious the witches, and after that there is the fairy coming and the birds. This magical, of course, in the Mahler music is more about human emotions. So you don't have to tell the story with birds, but there is this kind of way to express all the human emotions through the music, through the symphony.
He's an interesting figure because he is maybe, on the one hand, the most subjective, the most romantic of composers, and yet such a modernist in terms of how he deals with material. And I find that very often interpreters are tempted to take sides, you know, and say, no, Mahler's looking to the future. And others, you know, say Mahler's, but of course there shouldn't be this disconnect.
I think you just touched a very important point. I think when you approach any composer, you should not put that composer in a box. This belongs to the box of classicism. This belongs to the box of the early romanticism, the late romanticism, the express, because it's very easy to put the composers in a jail, you know, in prison, in just Mahler was a late romantic, I don't know. Was a pre-expressionist, I don't know. Was Mahler. Mm-hmm. So what challenges me is to start from the text. Mm-hmm. And of course there are many elements romantic, absolutely, but there are many elements that are linked directly with the second Viennese school, with Schoenberg, without any doubt. Without Mahler, Schoenberg, probably the invention of the 12 tones technique will be much later without mm-hmm. Mahler, because Mahler with the 7th, the 9th, the 10th symphony, the Adagio, mm-hmm. were just pushing very hard in that direction, but without losing the lyricism of the late romantic. So mm-hmm. I cannot say in the first symphony is a romantic and the symphony number 9 is just close to expressionism. I cannot say that. It was Mahler, and he had a lot of trouble, a lot of anguish inside for the unfaithfulness of Alma, the fact he lost the daughter who died, and this tension when he was on the helm of the Wiener Staatsoper. He went to New York, he had very hard time because his way of approaching music was so strict, was so moral, ethic, mm-hmm. and just to convince Americans at that time how serious it is to make music. So he had not an easy life. And what makes his music so complex, in the same time so close to us.
When you are conducting Mahler for the first time with the orchestra that you haven't worked on it before, do you feel that there's a sort of language of understanding that needs to be built between you and the players that's specific to Mahler as well as specific to you and the players?
I think is always very mysterious what is happening in the first 10 minutes of rehearsals with the new orchestra, because the orchestra doesn't know you, you don't know the orchestra, so it doesn't matter what you are playing. No. It doesn't matter. You can play Bach, you can play Macmillan, absolutely, and all the repertoire in between. Yeah. But of course, I'm sure there is a common knowledge about the world of the biggest composers. So what is important is to show the orchestra you know the material you are conducting, you know the music. It's not important to convince them your idea is the best one in the world. It's not important. The important thing is to give them the impression you really know the material, you know what you are doing. They can like it or dislike it, but they will respect you if you are ready. So it's not the point to find friendship. You have really, the only friend in that moment is the composer and the music you are performing.
Yeah.
And we have to be a team around the project. And Mahler is that composer probably 10, 15 years ago, difficult to take up because was still, not 15 now, but let's say 20, 25 years ago, was still not incredibly popular. One of the champions of course, of Mahler later in the 60s, in the 70s was Bernstein. After that, all the composers, all the conductors conducted Mahler symphonies. And now I have to say also the audience is ready to attend any concert of Mahler. Probably the most difficult is number 7, but I think also number 7 can be performed without any problem today.
It is ferocious. I've heard Gergiev on the radio this spring say, you know, when the LSO announced their Mahler cycle, his only real worries were the acoustic in St. Paul's and how to conduct the last movement of that piece.
Yeah, yeah. You mean the 7? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also that movement, of course, can be ferocious, can be loud, but we don't have to lose the feeling. Is a very joyful moment.
Mm.
And joy shouldn't be loud. Overexcitement should be loud. The overexcited moment, but joy, the pure joy, should be very sonor, but not loud. I'm not making a criticism because I know the recording. I couldn't attend the concert, but I know the recording. I think is one of the most convincing recording of Mahler 7 we have today. But is this kind of joyful and refreshing moment after the two Nachtmusiken and this very ghostly scherzo and very complex March Funèbre-like introduction and very complex and fragmented first movement. So it's a sort of liberatory feeling that mm-hmm. the finale of 7th. I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I will go in this direction.
Do you have any thread that helps you make a line through that movement? Because the episodic nature of it, I think, is the hardest thing to make work in performance.
This is the major problem with not only Mahler 7, also I found with Mahler 6 and Mahler 3, first movement. I think you have two options. Or to find a line who meld everything together, you know, just to be smoother, to find the way to go into the new episode, to come out. Or the second option is to emphasize the differences,
mm-hmm.
just to break even more. What is right? I don't know. Depends very much on the momentum of the performance, but. Sometimes I go for the biggest differentiation, you know, the biggest tension, and sometimes I go for a longer line. Depends very much how is your feeling in that, you know, in that rehearsal before the performance. But you have these two options, and sometimes you never know if you are right or not, okay. if you're right or wrong. But those, I think, in those moments we mentioned before, are the possible solutions, I think.
Yeah. And do you feel comfortable to enter a rehearsal cycle not knowing which of those paths you're going to take by the end of the rehearsals?
Usually when I go to a rehearsal, I have a clear strategy.
Yeah.
I have a sort of basic idea I want, or I have an aim I want to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
But also you have to be very flexible because sometimes the orchestra gives you back, the reaction of the orchestra gives you some ideas mm-hmm. you never considered before.
Mm-hmm.
If those ideas are better ideas than yours, I would be stupid not to take it.
Of course.
to take them. So it's always a sort of mutual engagement when you make rehearsal. But what is incredibly dangerous is to stand in front of the orchestra without having an idea.
Mm.
You have to be able to change it, but you have to be you should have an idea before. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
You're finishing the series with Mahler 10,
mm.
Which you've recorded, and it's a stunning recording.
Thank you.
Of course, the piece has this whole extra element of the fact that he didn't finish it. And I think you do the cook version.
Correct.
How did you choose that version, and do you go beyond any of what he's done with it, or do you treat his text as a sort of finished thing to work with?
It's always difficult to answer this question, because when you just touch a complexion of a symphony, what is Mahler, what is the work of Derek Cook? Of course, we do this version because Chandos asked me to record that version. So I've been forced to learn that. By the time I finished the process of learning, I like the I liked that version. And at the beginning, I was not convinced. But by the end of the process, I found more Mahler in Mahler 10 than Mozart in Mozart Requiem.
How interesting.
Yeah. So I think the musical material, the way it's treated, is more Mahlerian than the Mozart Requiem with Süssmayr especially is Mozartian. I think is more Mahler in Mahler 10. So that has been the turning point. So from that moment, I really went for it. Even with the completion of Derek Cook, you think, probably here I will ever done different orchestration or different doubling of this. But now I'm convinced. If I have to conduct Mahler 10th Symphony, I will do this version of Derek Cook. I'm doing, obviously.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, we don't in other fields of art feel we have to repair everything as it looked the day it was finished, the Venus of de Milo. We wouldn't go and put a prosthetic arm on, you know. And there's something moving in a way about the bits where the texture gets quite thin in that piece.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You mean especially the solo of the flute in the last movement?
Yeah,
some of
these moments where you think, well, he would have written a counter melody or he would have filled out the counterpoint.
Yeah.
But it's a window on the end of his life, in a way.
Yeah, I think that hugely beautiful music in the last movement with the flute line, very simply harmonized with very simple chords, is so moving. So, of course, probably Mahler, who knows, wanted to add a contrapuntal line, who knows. But even without... is magic.
Absolutely.
And so we never known what could have been the complexion by Mahler of Mahler 10, but what we have is good enough to be performed and to be enjoyed.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
you're doing the Sixth Symphony.
Correct.
As part of this cycle. There's been a lot of discussion in recent years about the order of the inner movements, and I hesitate to even ask you, but there's a tendency to sort of let the decision be guided by whichever musicologist yells the loudest. Is there a logic to the text for you that helps you decide which order to do them in, and which order do you do them in?
You know, this is a problem very, very, very common, because all the musicologists, and Mahler himself, he just changed the order in the performances he did. So, before you start to learn Mahler 6, you read all the musicologists. You just go to see what Mahler did. But by the end, you have to make a decision. Mm-hmm. You don't have to trust one and distrust the other one. So at the end, you are in front of the score, facing the fact you have to conduct and you have to make a decision. So which is my decision? Which is absolutely, that is absolutely not the definitive one, but I think I'm convinced so far the slow movement should be in the third place. If you ask me why, for a very from the structure point of view, it's very strong to start almost attacca the second movement without leaving a big break between first and second, because the symphony starts with this repeated very marcato with big power A, pum pum. Scherzo, mm-hmm. starts with the repeated A, but what it's changing is just the pulse. So in the beginning is in 4-4, mm-hmm. and there is in 3-8. But for the audience point of view, until the moment when the French horns are coming in, you cannot detect it's a 3-8. So which is the difference between 4-4 and 3-8? Are just stones. You are just stoning someone with a lot of A. Mm-hmm. So I like the idea. Just when this, you finish the first movement, after that you start, bam, bam, again. The tempo should be the same. And it's very shocking, because after this huge painting, fantastic painting of the first movement, the impression is, oh, we go back to the beginning. It's like the first repeat. Bam, bam, bam. And for two bars, you think that. And after that, it starts a completely different. So this kind of motif, this pum, 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 connecting like that gives a power of the beginning of each movement so big. After that, when you finish this, like one marble, one stone, first and second movement, mm-hmm. you take a longer break. After that, you go in this beautiful third movement. I don't know if I'm right, I repeat, but I think it's very effective, as very is like a operatic drama in that way. It works in this way, works better, I think.
It's a drama that's born out of a specific musical detail.
Yeah.
And it creates a moment, because the first movement has ended so joyfully, and suddenly you're reminded it's a tragic piece.
Yeah.
And it's a special key for him, A minor, too.
Absolutely.
I mean, think of the second movement of the Fifth Symphony.
Absolutely.
It's exactly in the same world.
Yeah. Absolutely the same world. Yeah, the same atmosphere, same mood. Yeah.
As you mentioned at the beginning, you know, 30 years ago this music was not so known. Now it's so central, and I mean, you know, he's become the mainstay composer. What do you see in 20 years? Is there going to be another Mahler to eclipse him from the next generation? Will we will we see his music in a different light in 20 years?
But the perception of the music of any composers is going to change slightly, but what will not change is the value of the music by Mahler. It's like Beethoven. Mm-hmm. Beethoven, you can have a different perception, but will be always Beethoven. Bach, the same. Mozart, the same. Wagner, the same. Verdi, the same. Mm-hmm. Mahler, the same. Shostakovich will be the same. Mm-hmm. So this kind of giants, you will have moments where they probably will be probably performed a little bit less, but after a while, again, back. So.
And it seems like as the time goes by, the true giants, the styles that surrounded them become less important. And like you say, Mahler, was he late Romantic? Was he pre-expressionist? He becomes Mahler. You know, was Beethoven classicist or early Romantic? He becomes Beethoven.
Bravo. Absolutely. You got absolutely the point. Beethoven is Beethoven. Bach, Baroque. Okay, but Baroque, that means with the old keys. Now he was making the 12, you know, with the well-tempered clavier. And he's incredible. So Bach was Bach.
And Mozart, too. The greatest of Mozart, you know, the Requiem, the 40th Symphony, it's very little classical music in those pieces.
What about the big Mass in C minor?
Unbelievable.
Is not romantic, that music? No. Is more than romantic.
Romantic and Baroque.
And Baroque. Bravo. So is that was Mozart.
Yeah.
Was Mozart. Yeah. Purely Mozart. Yeah. And Shostakovich the same. Now it's very easy to say, it's very Soviet. No, Shostakovich will talk the same language for all the human beings. And because I had these very strong values inside. So I think these kind of composers will be really always on the peak of the mountain.
Absolutely. Well, Maestro, I think that's a wonderful place to leave it. Thank you very
much. Thanks a lot. It's been lovely to have a chat with you.